Today, I will be beginning a series on solitude. The project will be to talk about recovering a healthy solitude. A few weeks ago, I gave an introductory lecture or a lesson on solitude, and the response was significant and substantial enough to warrant deeper delving into that. And so I guess this is by request, but to really go into the project, if you will, of solitude. I think when one talks about that word today, already, especially even in terms of 12-step recovery, one looks at it, or one can look at it, in terms of its being very unhealthy. Because we do in our groups, in our 12-step meetings, we look at relationality, or connecting back again to relationships, as the primary project, because many of us have felt disconnected and isolated from those relationships that are meaningful to us, and we wish to connect back again. And so when we hear the word solitude, it strikes us as strange, in a sense. At the same time, I know that for my clients, or for the patients that have come through Ridgeview who I work with, there's always been this kind of need, this need for solitude, or need from separation, from sort of the inundation and drowning in group after group after group, and a real sense of, my goodness, it would be nice to be able just to get off by myself, right? We wish the nature trail went on for miles, right? And I guess in some sense, we know, each of us knows that deep down inside, that solitude, there's something about solitude at its core that is very healthy and necessary for balance. Necessary for balance. That solitude is extremely necessary. and so we long for that. We long for that. What today's lesson will work with, if you will, are conventional or contemporary notions of solitude in our culture, so that we can attempt to get beneath and look deeper at healthier forms of solitude. But first, you know, it seems to me we need to explore what our culture, or how our culture sees solitude. So I'd like to talk a little bit about contemporary solitude and depression. Okay. I do believe, along with a growing number of others in the field of mental, emotional, and spiritual health, that depression is one of the symptoms of unhealthy solitude. The feeling of unhealthy solitude. It's one of those results of not being able to deal healthfully with solitude. And at some level, not being able to get the healthy sort of solitude that we need. Some of you might remember a quote that I gave a few weeks ago by Lambos Kamperides, I believe it's pronounced, who wrote in Parabola, a wonderful journal on the need to discover inner seasons of one's life and look at the world in a deeper way to discern guiding mythologies, etc. Lambros Kamperides says that men and women are suffering from loneliness and solitude as never before. And it is due to a simple lack of communication. And that contemporary solitude often degenerates into a profound depression. Because people realize in their innermost beings the futility of leading a life filled with a solitude that doesn't lead anywhere. a solitude which is meaningless and unproductive. And that spoke to me. It seems that I see more of this, a kind of solitude or an emptiness or a loneliness that seems not to lead anywhere. And many of us, many of us have attempted to overcome our solitude by throwing ourselves into organizations, by throwing ourselves into work. And it looks real healthy at first, you know. I'll throw myself into the United Way Project, or the American Legion, or the New Pioneers, or some kind of Greenpeace, and Native American Rights Fund movement, or whatever it might be. And what happens, though, is we end up burning out, and it can often be a trigger back into a sense of disconnectedness, a sense of meaninglessness, and for many of us, a trigger even to begin using our primary addictions. Of course, the 12 steps has an incredible wisdom. If you look at the first step, it's really one that encourages a solitude of self-confrontation, right? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, powerless over, those of you who are sitting here that may not be alcohol, you can just fill in the blank. Powerless over parents. Powerless over and it, not only children, but adults. Powerless over parents. It could be powerless over substances, powerlessness over work, powerlessness over our sexuality, powerlessness over our desire to mood alter, powerlessness over anything. It takes a kind of solitude, if you will, in order to push away what the social understandings of controlled use is all about and controlled medication is all about, to somehow push that away to discern and discover for the self where we are takes a measure of solitude. But when one goes from step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 all the way to 12, where do we end up? Community. We end up with fellowship, correct? We end up with some kind of connecting back to the community so that we contribute to society. And I know sometimes in the beginning it looks real selfish to even family members of addicts and alcoholics who are going to all those meetings, you know, right? And doing all this, doing all that, and going to the groups and doing things for themselves. And it feels real selfish. And like, well, when are you going to really get involved in doing something like really for the community? I was reminded of that in a men's group on Friday when and I asked who were members of men's groups. And one man raised his hand and said, well, I am, and I'm a member of American Legion and New Pioneers. And we do all these things for the disenfranchised and for human rights and for people who can't afford things, and it sounded so wonderful. And then another person said, well, I go to a men's meeting at Triangle. I'm a relapser, and I go to men's meeting at Triangle once a week. I said, well, what do you do? Well, we eat a lot of donuts and drink coffee. Okay. What else do you do? Is the response, sometimes can be the response from someone who does not understand the need sometimes to break away, and for everybody has their own season of how long that takes, but to break away in order to get a sense of things once again, to begin to understand what healthy bonding is all about, healthy relating is all about, might mean drinking coffee and donuts, which, by the way, please, this is not an AA meeting. I would ask for folks that if you commit yourself to coming inside this door, to please stay here for 50 minutes and then leave. I know that there are stuff out there and coffee out there, and sometimes we're so used to being able to come in and out. At the same time, I don't want to like control you and lock doors, because I want you to come here because you want to. Well, at least the majority of you. I know in the beginning we need a little encouragement. But I want it to be a sense of a kind of an open door policy of coming in because you want and leaving when you need to. But please, I would ask you to commit yourself to staying here and being seated, because it can be highly distracting, especially to me, because I sometimes get a sense of connectedness to you, and then I see folks going out and in and out and in, and it is a little tough. My tolerance level is pretty good, but eventually it gets to me. So I'd appreciate that. But we need these meetings, or we need these places where we can go. We need CODA. We need all the A meetings. Okay, we need them all in order to begin a more profound kind of healing process. And the whole point of all this is so that we can go back to our families in a more of a healed way. We can be more productive. We can go back to those fellowships that are highly crucial, highly important for humanity. And that maybe even we will all learn a kind of social entrepreneurship. That is, we will do our business life with a sense of our spiritual values. In other words, not only will we connect to organizations that are humanitarian, but we will, all of us will begin wanting to do business, to do our business work and our everyday work with our spiritual values in mind. Because we're getting tired. I hear a lot of people getting tired, more and more tired, of spending 70% of our life or 70% of our time until retirement. Right? And then we get to retirement and most of us are too sick to enjoy what we've hoarded anyway. Okay? Or this weekly kind of going through the mill of stress, right? And then happy hour. None of us here understand anything about happy hour, I'm sure. But what that says to culture, I look at culture and I psychoanalyze it because I think culture is a reflection of my own self, of my own sickness and my own desire for health. But this whole desire for a happy hour suggests that work is miserable. So we live most of our life working, 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 becoming more and more isolated, becoming more and more lonely, becoming more and more unhealthfully solitudinous. That's not a word, but I'll go ahead and use it. because we lack a sense of meaning and purpose. So that the 12th step of having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the world and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's the practice, the principles in all our affairs is what I'm underlining. I can't stand proselytizing. I really can't. I can't stomach that. I guess because I was raised in a culture of this kind of preaching, you know, and people wanting me to be where they are in their belief system. I really don't. I find that highly distasteful. But at least at a certain level of evolution, you know, human beings need to stop that. Right? You know, this kind of, you know, preaching so that other people can believe what we believe, rather than being tolerant and being compassionate and allowing other people to have their own space for their belief, etc. But that part, to practice these principles in all our affairs, that's what I'm talking about. And more people, even in their work, are wanting a work whereby they can practice their spiritual principles in. Okay? And that's wonderful. That's wonderful. But that's step 12. Step 1, and everybody has their own pace. Please. I know you're looking at the world and some of you feel as though you might be out of it. And the rest of the world is going their own way and they're getting involved and they're doing this. And everybody seems to be doing this. And I'm behind, sometimes we might feel, right? Or what am I doing in treatment? Or what am I doing healing and all spending all this money for me to kind of understand where I am and where I fit in the world? Well, everybody has their own pace. I mean, I'm definitely a slow bloomer. Okay? I mean, I know the West has this strange kind of thing that if you go into the monastery or something, you never come back out. You know, and that if you come back out, you're kind of like an ex-monk or something, or, you know, a weirdo, you know, or you didn't make it or something like that, you know. You know, you know what I'm saying? Priests or nuns or ministers or monks, you know, and they come. Well, you know, the East never had that notion. You know, you had periods of solitude where you entered a place of profound reflection and meditation and prayer so that you would understand how you wish to contribute to the community. That was the notion of the East. Okay? Buddhists and Hindus, monks have been doing that, and Chinese monks have been doing that for centuries. It's the strange notion we have in the West that somebody kind of goes into the religious life and meditates or prays or becomes a hermit, that they're going to kind of fall off in the face of the cosmic metaphysical universe, and they're not supposed to come back. Because they're weird and special, and it's kind of, okay, it might be, let them go there. And then we have these strange commercials of big fat friars, you know, baking bread and drinking liquor, you know. This is a medieval notion, you know, that's absolutely not at all what occurs in the majority of cases that I have seen in terms of a true monk or a true solitary. So we have some strange notions. I'm just kind of throwing these things out to you because we have some strange notions about solitude and also about community. And what I see about the 12 steps is a very balanced and practical understanding that it takes a lot of time to understand who I am as a self. It takes a lot of psychological time for me to really undergo a life review. And it takes a fair amount of solitude to then go back into the community to really contribute to the society at a profound level of destiny, to bring my spiritual values into the world, to practice my spiritual principles in all my affairs. Okay? So that's what all this is leading to. And so when I speak to you today, and in the following weeks about solitude, I'm wanting to give you a little bit of context here, okay? A context, a wider vision of why I believe this society needs healthy solitude more than ever. And as I told you, I'm a late bloomer. I stayed like 7 years, you know, in solitude. But only so that I could understand how to cultivate solitude when I came back into the world and had a clearer view of how I would go about contributing to the world. Now, I did do that at a time that's very dangerous for most men in this culture, in my 20s, when a man is supposed to be, you know, going up the corporate ladder. You know, and there are risks involved. There are risks involved. But I believe that risk is actually a lot less than the risk to never go within and retreat, if you will, into the self to find out profoundly what you want to do with your life. That is a greater risk. That is a greater risk. Not to go within the self to really find, not to go to a place to eat donuts and have coffee and learn how to bond accurately and to talk about what we are powerless over. That's why all of these groups are so important that are happening today. All of these workshops and these transformation workshops where you go back to even your childhood and then even intrauterine and pre-uterine states and all of this. This is wonderful behavior. We need to go back, if you will, to take a good look, to have a life review in order for us to gain some balance, vision in our life so that we can go forward. So contemporary solitude, you know, this solitude that leads nowhere, meaningless, it's unproductive, is the solitude that I see today. I also see solitude that this is kind of a temporary chosen freedom from confrontation with one significant other or family, right? I'm leaving. Door slams. Some of us have to watch that. Some of us will even leave confrontations and to go to a meeting. You know, we'll use our meeting in order not to confront things that we need to confront. But I see a solitude today that is a solitude of running away from confronting. A solitude that sometimes is about trying to get away from the family. Geographical kind of cures, whereby we'll try to get out of the family situations that we are finding threatening. Some of us feel the pain of solitude of not being in a relationship. Right? Oh, you're not in a relationship. No. So, I'm this strange monster. I'm not in a relationship, right? You know? I told you a little bit about this a few weeks ago, right? We see these weirdos going alone to movies or in a restaurant or walking in a park. These strange
reach people that are not in a relationship. So everybody gets a dog. I'm not alone. Right? Or everybody gets the phones, you know, and puts them on and puts on a jogging suit. I'm not alone. I'm not in a relationship. So I can't, I'm not a human being. That's the kind of solitude I see today. A loneliness whereby we're alone with ourselves and feel terrible, or we're alone in a crowd. Meeting the void is an aloneness that I see today. And meeting the void is something that's not looked at as positive. In any sophisticated spirituality, meeting the void is one of the first things that one does when one is meeting God in the God encounter, is meeting the void. But see, in a society that has been totally superficialized, one in which we live, meeting the void is a bad experience. We look at that as being negative. And so when we meet the void, that's terrible. Oh my God, I'm meeting the void. I'm meeting blankness, emptiness. Oh no, that's looked upon as being a bad thing. And actually, it's one of the initiatory experiences of any true spirituality. You know, I'm going to be moving into that much later as we develop this notion of healthy solitude. But I'm going to be sort of touching down a little bit and what I'm seeing as unhealthy forms of solitude today. Solitude is boredom, right? When we're bored. Okay, that's solitude to many. A sense of boredom. Nothing to do. Want something to fill that space. Oftentimes weekends for many of us. You know, here we tried as a society to be sophisticated enough so we'd have more time on our hands, and when we get it, we kill it. And when we got time to kill, we get bored. So solitude can be boredom. The blues. And even ending in depression. Fear of not being successful can occur in solitude. Well, I'm not doing anything. I'm not being productive. Uh-oh. I'm not with it. I'm not in touch with that American work ethic. That says what? The American work ethic? We used to call it the Protestant work ethic. I don't call it the Protestant work ethic anymore. I call it the American work ethic. Because I've seen Jews, Catholics, Protestants, atheists, agnostics, extraterrestrials from the planet Saturn. I have seen every kind of person. Embedded in this work ethic that says, okay, we are predestined. Some of us will go to heaven, some of us will go to hell. That's already figured out. None of us really know, but we do have a hint, we do have a suggestion of some way of knowing whether you or me are going to make it. And that is as if I'm always doing something. If I'm lazy, if I'm a slouch, if I'm just sitting there, not doing a darn thing, chances are I'm going to hell. I'm not going to be one of those people that are going to be chosen. That's that work ethic. That's a spiritual work ethic. Sickly spiritual, I would add, but it's a spiritual work ethic. So if I'm producing and doing something and being successful, well, that means that maybe I'm one of the chosen. Okay? So this, sometimes for some of us, loneliness or solitude can be this fear of not being successful, fear of not producing, right? We need to be human doings, right? To be a human being is not a value in our society today. And but when we talk about what it means to be human or being human, but we're really human doings. And that's part of that really that sick, dysfunctional American work ethic. That is slowly, I think, being eroded, thank God. And probably because a lot of us are getting sick. We're getting so sick with that sense of having to be human doings, that we get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And some of us even end up in a hospital. Solitude also is lack of motivation to network. because relationships have become part of our work and our goals for success, right? So when we're alone, not networking. So when we go, all relationships are about business, so we're always bringing our card, you know? I still forget to bring my card when I go to workshops. You know, even the workshops on self-help, everyone's bringing their damn card. You know, well, where's your card? I don't have one. You don't have a card? I didn't bring them with me. I thought we were coming here to, like, do something for ourselves. Well, I'm so-and-so, and I'm part of this. And networking is okay, and it's important. I know that. But my goodness, it can be a sense of aloneness if we feel that whenever we're going, we've got to be networked. That's part of, I'm afraid that's a part of that this American work ethic that's seeping in to even things that seem to be spiritual and forwarding of good qualities and so on. I think it's our real sense, our desperation that we don't really want to be alone. We're really afraid of being alone. Now, there's all sorts of solitude. It's amazing when we take a look, isn't it? But to take a look, one has to separate oneself off and be in solitude in order to take a look. See? That's the whole point. Solitude as enjoyment of one's possessions. That's what I see. I have more possessions than you do. Solitude of terminal uniqueness. How about solitude as having different things, being unique, having that one dress that nobody else has? That's what solitude has become today. Or having that suit or tie that no one else has. A solitude of uniqueness, whereby we want to have things that no one else has. And that makes us, because we're trying to be helpfully solitary, so that means having things that someone else doesn't have. Making a fashion statement. How about solitude as privacy and accumulation of private property? That's what solitude has become today. So if we have a lot of land and if we have protection from the outside by locks and gates and security systems, then we have solitude. And there's solitude as punishment, solitary confinement. You've been bad, you've been a criminal, solitude for you, solitary confinement. Or how about solitude with withdrawing love, the fear of abandonment kind of solitude that we experience in relationships? Don't leave me, we say, and we shut the door, and we don't want somebody to leave us. We get so desperate that someone who we are attached to and enmeshed with are going to leave us. And what that is really about is our fear of abandonment. And how one gets solitude on the other side is by withdrawing love. How about solitude as imposed exile from a society, a club, religion, church, family? The feeling of being left behind. That kind of imposed solitude. That really is wounding solitude, isn't it? You know, we really find out where our friends are and who our friends are when we do sometimes experience a lot of pain and a lot of taboo pain, right? And a lot of us who are here, you know, we're people who need to go into a hospital to get mentally well and physically well and emotionally well. And because actually living in the world out there is so sick, I understand why you had to come here. And I think that's why so many people relapse. They come here and they get well and they go back into the toxic world. Solitude, even more profoundly, as the loss of self, isn't it? You know, we experience solitude, we have a sense that we've lost ourselves, we've abandoned ourselves, or the fear of another's abandonment, as I suggested. Solitude is vulnerability. The bottom line is what I see in our culture today is a profound disconnection of ourselves and our soul in authentic spirituality. Because all of these experiences, if any one of you can resonate with any of the experiences of solitude or definitions of solitude that I've given you, then you certainly are a candidate for discovering authentic soulfulness in the world. If you can resonate with any of this, then you understand what it means to be soul sick, suffering at the level of soul. Because whatever we do, it doesn't matter anymore. Everything becomes a job. Even our addictions become a job. Our relationships become a job, our work becomes a job, and our solitude has become a job. And when that happens, a lot of us feel like we want to check out. So I'm not surprised by the rampant suicides, and I'm not surprised about rampant homicides and criminality in our world, because what that is suggesting is this soul sickness whereby there seems to be no place to turn, and even when we go into solitude, we are frightened by our demons and our inner demons and our nightmares. We're frightened by our ghosts within ourselves, because we realize that when we go into solitude, we are taking everything with us, including our pain, and we'll probably see it in a larger way. And I only tell all of you, please know this, that it's not only about the 20th century today. If we go back to the origin of man and the origin of woman, everyone has had to confront painful solitude. And we are learning how to do it together again. Because at some level, if we don't learn how to do it together and mentor ourselves into how to do solitude, we're not going to do it appropriately. We're not going to do it accurately. But if this is the good news I want to tell you today, and continuing to talk about, the good news is that there are many ways to cultivate a healthy sense of solitude and connectedness in our world today. And we're learning those. But we have to stick together, take it bit by bit, because we've really lost the sense of true rites of initiation, spiritual initiation. We really have as a culture. If we hadn't, we could do solitude much better than we're doing it. Okay? I have a lecture series called The Rites of Immaturity, or Rites of Maturity, Spiritual Rites of Maturity. If you haven't gotten that, you might want to get that, because it talks about this more in detail. But we really have lost the sense of the rites of initiation on proper uses of separating out from society, of going through rituals of initiation so that we can feel spiritually connected, and then going back into the world, into the community. We've lost the sense of this. And so many people come to me and tell me that they never really understood their baptism, or they never understood their bar or bas mitzvah. They never understood their rituals. And you know what? They blame themselves. They blamed themselves. Or some people who never became baptized because they said I wanted to be real, and so I didn't really feel like I was connected, and so I didn't. Or I never became bar or bas mitzvah, or etc. Or I never joined that club because I felt like I didn't have... You know, and I will tell all of you, it was not your fault for feeling that. The only one that through the last buck stops is the teacher and the mentor. It was not your fault. If you went through experiences, profound spiritual experiences such as this, and you didn't understand them, or you had a sense of guilt that you didn't properly do them, it was not your fault. You were just not properly mentored. And I tell you what, one of the biggest things is that you were not given a healthy sense of solitude and separation. Do you know that any profound ritual worth its salt needs a profound experience of separation? And that in that separation, one experiences some form of pain? Because if you separate from your family of origin, or you separate from those who you love, that's the first rule of any profound spiritual initiation is separation, because we have to learn how to become adults. The first thing we will experience is pain. Okay? The Aborigine community. The Aborigines have a profound sense of spirituality. And for them, the solitude whereby a youth gets taken out, Native Americans have the same thing, where a youth gets taken out of the tribe to experience solitude. They even have things like, you know, tooth knocking, the Aborigines, knocking out the tooth. Now, I don't suggest we do that, okay? I know dentists would love it, but let's don't do that. But what did the tooth knocking mean? Huh? No. The tooth knocking meant oh, being in the world is painful. That's what that meant. For the youth to come out and to have the tooth knocked out meant that, oh, the world is painful. I see. So part of it is, but it is painful in a context of spirituality. And so there are a sense of limits. And a young boy learns that early. That's what that meant. And they were separated out and they were told the stories, the mythologies that meant something. And they were enveloped by the community, right? And for women, the whole notion of menstruation was, for Native Americans, for many other societies, that was put in the context of spirituality. The pain of that experience was a sign that to give birth is painful. Spiritual birth is painful. What do we do today? In religious rituals, we're not given a sense of solitude that is proper or healthy. All we're told is what we need to do to gain membership. That's all. We're told, well, here's what you do to get membership in the community, and then you'll be part of us. We're not told about solitude. We're not told about the necessity of experiencing pain in the world. Well, no wonder why we have addictions. Because addictions are about medicating the pain and lowering the pain threshold. So indeed, we are cultivating a society of wimps rather than warriors, because what we're doing is we're not seeing pain in the context of spirituality. Where we are seeing pain is in verbal abuse, emotional abuse, war, fighting, and all of this stuff, because it acts out in the shadow form when we don't bring it into the spiritual realm. And so what we're doing is medicating our solitude. Right? We have very, very low in our society today. I think we are in danger of extinction for one reason more than any other, is our pain threshold is lowering and lowering. Okay? Our pain threshold is lowering and lowering because we weren't told early on that the world will fail me. Parents will fail me. The world is limited, but it's okay because pain is a part of life and there are many joys too. But we need to understand the sense of limits. That's the point of the tooth knocking. What do we have now? Tooth fairy. Right? That's where our culture's come, tooth fairy. Where my tooth falls out, I don't even know that it has fallen out. I put it under a pillow and I get a quarter. I think the tooth fairy notion is one of the lost understanding that if it was put in the context of loss, we would understand that that's a spiritual phenomenon. That's a spiritual experience. That loss and failure and all and limits and pain have to be brought back into spirituality, back into the world. And then we can see it in context and we don't have to taboo it and shame it like we're doing. And that's why so many people are feeling, well, I've got to be here. I have to be successful. If I experience pain, that's bad. So I've got to medicate. We don't understand anymore that pain is a part of the spiritual experience. I had a profound teaching when I heard a therapist that had been in the field for a long time, who happens also to be a spiritual counselor and a family man, who told me, you know what I want to learn how to do as a father when my daughter grows up, because she's young right now? I want to be able to tell her, I failed you. I'm so trying to be perfect. I want to tell her that I failed you, and I want her to scream at me and say, you failed me, Dad. And I want to be able to say the truth. Yes, I failed you. I did my best and I failed you. And the world will fail you. And that's part of life, darling. But what do we get? He told us what he got from his family. From one family member he got, yeah, I failed you. I'm sorry. I failed you. Sorry. No behavior change. I'm the one parent. No behavioral change. No sense of well, what does that mean to fail? And maybe we can try better. But the world will fail. Nothing. Just, I failed you. Yeah. I guess that means that you're a schmuck. I failed you and I'm a schmuck. The other family member, which happened to be the mother in this case, and I can relate to this, said, I failed you? What do you mean I failed you? Who put the food on the table? Who slaved for you your whole life? Who washed your dirty underwear, and your father, he left and he did this, and, but your mother has stayed there. I can give you a whole litany on that one. Never able to say, yes, I failed you. Yes, you will fail me. Yes, the teacher will fail you. Yes, the dog will fail you. Yes, life will fail us, because that's part of it. And through failure and through loss and through pain, we recognize that we have limits. And that even the most profound seers and sages had to experience the abandonment of God. God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you failed me? And God had to say, yep, I failed you. Even God fails us. That's a part of the spiritual journey. It gives us a sense of humility and limits. And many of us, either we have experienced so many failures and so many losses and we can't put it in a spiritual context, or there are other people who are so have been so insulated from failure, right? We want to have our kids. We don't want our kids to experience fear or pain or anything, right? So that when they get to a certain life and they get to a certain stage in life and their heart gets broken, they feel as though they've been screwed. They feel as though they've been real duped. Well, Mom and Dad, thanks a lot for insulating me from all this. I wish you would have told me exactly what would happen. You see? So what happens is parents insulate their children from pain. From the sense that one is going to have to undergo a rite of initiation, in a sense. Okay. We have to bring it back to spirituality. This is a call to you. We have to bring it back to spirituality. We have to bring back failure and loss and all of these things back into the spiritual realm so that we know what true rites of initiation are all about.